From WBUR Boston, I'm Anthony Brooks, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Some might say David Maxwell is not your typical blues man, a classically trained pianist, a white guy who grew up in the Boston suburbs, who wound up playing with some of the great bluesmen of the past 50 years, among them John Lee Hooker, Otis Rush, James Cotton, Pine Top Perkins, and Otis Spann. Today, he's with us in studio, playing right now, in fact. David Maxwell won a Grammy Award and a W.C. Handy Award, the blues equivalent of the Grammy, for his work on James Cotton's album Deep in the Blues in 1977. So kick back and take a break from the news of the day and listen to him play. You'll hear the notes tumble off his keyboard that express hope, heartache, and happiness, and everything else that's the blues. All right. And with me now in the studio is David Maxwell, veteran musician on the blues scene. He's played with musicians like Muddy Waters, Bonnie Raitt. John Lee Hooker said of him, he plays the blues like it should be played. He plays the low-down, dirty, funky blues. Welcome, David.
Hey, Anthony. How you doing?
Great. It's great to have you here. It's great to have you playing live. It's great to see you playing live. It's really exciting.
Well, it feels good. Thank you.
Good. So we're going to talk. We're going to talk about the blues. We're going to hear David play. And we're going to ask listeners to join the conversation with David Maxwell. What do you hear in the blues? What do you hear in the way David plays them? And is this an American art form that's disappearing? Do you worry about that? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. David, let's start by just telling a little bit about your story, how you got into the blues. As we mentioned, classically trained guy from the suburbs in Boston. How did you get infected by the blues bug?
Well, Anthony, I had some technique through classical music, which I took piano lessons, when I was younger. And I kept with that for a while, and then I got into some jazz and chordal studies when I was in high school. And I was always interested in improvisation, no matter what. And I was really more interested in jazz. And the blues thing didn't really hit me until maybe the mid-60s, just out of high school and kind of like hearing people like Muddy Waters and Otis Spann. I had been into listening to some of the pre-war stuff, country blues. My good friend at the time, Alan Wilson, who was in Canned Heat, he achieved, fame in that group. And he was, in a high school in the town next to mine, and we used to hang out and jam in high school. He was playing trombone at the time. And, we did some jazz jamming, really. And then later on, he picked up the harp. But we used to get together, and he turned me on to different sounds, and We heard a lot of jazz, heard a lot of blues, and then it was just, kind of hanging out and mm-hmm. getting into that. And eventually, I kind of began to frequent some of the places around Boston where this whole great blues rediscovery was happening.
Yeah, so this is the 1960s, and right. There's sort of a resurgence in interest of these old Chicago blues guys, and that's really taken off among other places in Boston, at a place called Club 47.
The Club 47 was legendary.
Cambridge, Mass. Yeah.
Right, in Cambridge, Massachusetts. At first, it was a place for primarily folk musicians, although at the original location on Mount Auburn Street, used to have some jazz there. Sam Rivers played there. But then people like Joan Baez and Judy Collins and all the great folk musicians at the time, Tom Rush, Eric Schmidt, all these people, I'm leaving out many,
sure.
were playing. And it was only when this whole blues rediscovery was happening that I, went to the place, really, and it had changed. And it had moved to another location in Cambridge on Palmer Street. And that was the Club 47. And people like Skip James, Sun House, Booker White, Fred McDowell, were being, they had gigs there. And also some of the Chicago blues groups like Muddy Waters, Otis Rush and Howling Wolf, you know, they played there as well.
Now, in that period, and speaking of those guys, it was Otis Spann, right, who was Muddy Waters' pianist, who really kind of took you under his wing, or you became enthralled by the way he played. What did you like? I mean, what grabbed you?
Well, with Spann, you know, you really had the so much depth to his playing. He had the touch, for one thing. He had a certain kind of phrasing, and he was, he could, you know, his dexterity was amazing, his ideas, his creativity, but above all, his soul, the poignancy in his playing.
We have a little bit of Otis Spann queued up and ready to go. Can we play that? And let's just listen to it for a minute or so, and then as we come out of it, tell me more about that, about what you heard.
Right.
Oh, that's so nice, so deep, so soulful. Talk about what you're hearing there, the piano.
Well, that's Otis singing, by the way, as James Cotton playing harmonica. As a matter of fact, this was recorded in 65. This is the Muddy Waters band at the time, and Muddy's even playing in the background. But the piano is just kind of weaving in and out. And I think that the music of that time, with the Chicago blues style and other styles around the country, there was a lot of interaction among the musicians. There was a lot of give and take. It wasn't just, you know, with the guitar out front and the band behind it kind of supporting it. There was a lot of interaction among the harp player, the singer, the piano player, the guitars, and there was this conversation going on.
Okay, so you want to play something for us?
Sure.
All right. Tell us what it is and take it away.
Well, what I thought I would do is, this is kind of a piece that I wrote with a kind of gospel influence, but you might hear a little Spann stuff in this, but later on I'll get to some of that Spann. This is called Take Me On Home.
David Maxwell playing live in our studio. You can join the conversation with Dave Maxwell. What do you hear in the blues? In the way Dave Maxwell plays the blues, is this an American art form that you worry is disappearing? Give us a call. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're going to take a short break. We're going to come back. We're going to hear more music with David, a little more conversation, and your calls. This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about the blues with piano man David Maxwell. You can join the conversation. Do you connect with the sound of the blues? Does the music lay bare your soul? Does it inspire you? We're at 1-800-423-8255. And playing now in the background there and soon in the forefront is blues man David Maxwell. So good.
Hey, thanks, Andy.
So before the break, we were talking about your involvement with Otis Spann, how he sort of took you under his wing. I'd love to sort of hear a story about that happen. I mean, did you walk up to him while he was playing and say, hey, man, how do you do that? Show me how it works. Or how does that process work? And how receptive was he?
Well, as I began to listen to his music and try to cop some of the licks and, you know, become a real blues piano player or whatever, groups like Muddy Waters and John Lee Hooker came to town, and we used to hang out with them a lot, you know, some of the musicians around town. And they were in town for maybe, you know, a few days or even a week, for instance, at the Jazz Workshop, this great club that was in Boston at the time. These guys used to stay at a hotel, and we used to come around and hang out a little bit. So I got to know them some. And then there was often informal jam sessions that would take place at somebody's house. And so, you know, during the day, you know, they enjoyed kind of hanging out, and they liked the attention and the enthusiasm of some of the musicians. So, you know, I came up to Spann, you know, at the Jazz Workshop one time, and I said, hey, man, can I sit in, you know? And Muddy Waters was always very accommodating. He was always encouraging, you know, younger musicians, and, you know, he usually called up some of the musicians that were hanging around and, you know, for the last song or two. And, you know, eventually I, you know, got to sit in. And one night, Spann was sick, so Muddy said, hey, man, you want to, you know, play with me tonight?
Seriously? Otis Spann gets sick and Muddy Waters says, you're on.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
This is in the late 60s, and, you know, of course.
So that's the big break.
Well, that was one of the things that, you know, really made me feel good. I guess the big break was when Freddie King came to the Jazz Workshop, and I went down with my friend Bob Margolin, who's a great guitarist who's playing today, you know, we heard Freddie King, and I had never heard Freddie, and, you know, we heard him play, and I was always kind of wanting to sit in with everybody down there at the time, and I sat in with Freddie, and, you know, when Freddie began playing, I mean, his sound was just so immense. You know, he was just extraordinarily powerful with his whole presence, and everything was really loud and right in your face. And, you know, I sat in with him later on that night, and he says, hey, you want to go on the road with me? And
wow,
that's how it really started, on the road. But of course, people like Spann and Sonnyland Slim, and later on Pinetop Perkins, these were all piano players, you know, gave me a lot of encouragement.
Now, you know, I don't want to spend a long time talking about this, but I'm just always curious. These were black blues guys, very much a sort of black world at that time. Was that an issue? You know, you're this white kid from the suburbs. Was it hard for them to take you in for that reason, or not at all? Was it just you're interested in the music, that's good enough for us?
I think there was no feeling of separation, really. I mean, they were just, hey, let's, you know, get together and play and whatever you want to do. I mean, for one thing, I think they were kind of pleased in a way that, you know, there was a strong interest. I mean, it's true, you know, over the years, there was bitterness on the part of some musicians that they were being ripped off, justifiably so.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a whole other issue. I think the issue of young musicians trying to absorb what they were doing, you know, there wasn't too much of that uncomfortability.
1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK, to join this conversation with David Maxwell about the blues. Let's take a call. Sumir is calling from Boston. Hi, Sumir.
Hi there.
Thanks for calling.
Hey there, Sumir Verma. I just wanted to point out something. There's a fact of David that he probably won't talk about.
Good.
But you know, when we talk about genius and we talk about someone's versatility, David was at our place for dinner one night, and we got a beat-up old piano. It's probably out of tune for many years. And he picked up a CD I have of some Indian classical music and began playing it and then transformed it into the blues. And you haven't lived till you've heard David play the blues on a rag Bhairavi or something of that sort. by the way, that was before the wine was served.
Oh, that's cool. Great anecdote,
Samir. Absolute genius.
Thanks for the call. So what have you been? You've been listening to David for a while? I mean, you know his music well.
I know David very, very well, yes.
That's terrific. Thank you, Samir, for the call. But he raises a great point. You are known primarily as a blues person. That's your bread and butter. But you have really wide interests in music, and you sometimes incorporate them into the blues.
Well, that's right. I mean, I've always thank you, Sumir, and thank you for the anecdote. You know, that brings up a good point. I'm glad we've raised it now. You know, I'm not trying to be other than who I am. I didn't grow up, you know, in any shape, way, or form that, you know, you would think a traditional blues man grew up. And I have other interests. I mean, after all, I started with classical lessons, you know, and I'm not a great classical pianist, but I, you know, have some chops, and those help me a bit. And I've always been interested in music from all around the world, particularly music from India and the Near East, but also Africa, Japan, Asia, all over the place. Flamenco music, there's blues everywhere.
Yeah.
And
well, give me an example of that. You were actually, we were discussing this yesterday, and you were talking about how sometimes you'll be doing what is, for the most part, a traditional blues song, but, you know, Near East influences will somehow creep in there.
Right. Well, I mean, when I'm playing, particularly down in the lower register, and I'll demonstrate this. I'm going to move the mic over here. Okay. If I'm playing something like, you know, at times I'll be thinking of, well, kind of like John Lee Hooker and the way he used to sing and play, you know, and get those really dark sounds on his guitar. Mm. But at other times, it's true, you know, thinking of like the Indian instrument, some like the veena or something involving Persian music, which I love, or Turkish music, you know, there's a certain, or Middle Eastern stuff. Now, I'm not going to play that. You know, in the middle of a blues gig.
Right.
But there's just something about the sensibility of that, which
sure.
I try to translate into the blues, because to me, it's all about the inflection. It's all about the touch.
Mm.
You know, you really try to make it sing. I try to make it sing through my fingers. I'm not really a vocalist. You know, I do sing, and, you know, my latest CD, I have some of that. But to me, it's all about the inflection. And Otis Spann, you know, understood that as well. I mean, there were things. But then, you know, kind of like getting the color. Of that bleeding from one note to the next.
I'm interested, though, when you got that sort of Middle Eastern inflection in what you just played, you're still playing a blues scale in that? I mean, what makes it, how do you describe what gives it that Middle Eastern sound?
It's what gives it, you know, that sound is, I think, the intention and the kind of inflection that I'm using, so or that I'm trying to accomplish. So let me see. Let's see. You know, it's that kind of give and take.
Yeah.
It's
fascinating.
You know, because blues is a linear music, and by that I mean you have one scale, and it doesn't matter. If you change chords, basically you play the same scale. As in, you know, with jazz or something, you know. You know, it's always changing.
Right.
You know, and it's a vertical thing.
I'm laughing because, as you can hear, David Maxwell can play anything. And let's take a call. We've got a lot of people lined up here. Miriam is calling from Iowa City, Iowa. Miriam. Thank you. What's up?
Hello?
Hi, Miriam. You're on the air.
Mary.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mary.
Well, I just enjoy it because blues is secular gospel, and all Americans are down now, and we need it. And those sounds, those gospel sounds that he's ringing out, bringing tears to my eyes. I love it.
Oh, that's so nice,
thank
Mary.
You.
That's so nice. Do you like that description, David, secular gospel?
Well, yeah. I mean, I do mix it up, and, you know, it's, to me, I mean, I think, you know, you find the blues in the church music and whatever, and I know there's supposed to be a separation, and, you know, like a lot of blues men will, as they get older, actually, well, on Sunday I'm not going to play any blues, it's just gospel music or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, to me, the real emotion comes through those sounds, and, you know, I thank you for that, Miriam.
Mary, do you have opportunities and places to hear blues out there in Iowa City?
Oh, yeah, this is Blues Town, and my bus driver, I'm recording this on my, you know, on my set. I got to give this to my bus driver. He loves blues. And, you know, white blacks are the very, very minority in the whole state of Iowa, but when I came out from Philadelphia, these people were crazy for the blues. I thought they were crazy. Now I've joined them.
That's good to hear, Mary. Thanks for the call. Okay, we're going to take some more calls, but we're going to run out of time in this break. So I'd love, David, if you'd play something else.
All right, this is a piece that, we were talking about Spann earlier, so I'm going to play something. The first few choruses, I'll play what he wrote, and then I'm going to take off on it. This is a piece he called Marie. That was for his first wife. And it's kind of like a shuffle, but I'm going to throw in some boogie-woogie stuff, too. Thank you.
I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point. Listening to David Maxwell live in our studio. David Maxwell, who's played with some of the great blues men of all time. He's a great blues pianist in his own right. You can join the conversation with him. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Anthony Brooks, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be back with David Maxwell live after a short break.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com. And RHR International, an executive and organizational development firm committed to integrating executives into new roles.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're speaking this hour with blues man Dave Maxwell, who's playing live in our studio right now. We're inviting you to give us a call and join the conversation about the blues. Do you hear the blues? Is it in your neighborhood? Do you make an effort to go out and hear the blues? And what do you hear when you do? Give us a call, 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK, to talk to David Maxwell. Thanks, David. So what was that?
Well, that was called Breakdown on the Bayou. That was something before the total breakdown happened. It was influenced by Professor Longhair, who was a great New Orleans pianist.
Fantastic. Listen, there are a couple of more things that I'd love to talk to you about, but we've got listeners backed up who are dying to talk to you, too.
Right.
So I'm going to take a call right now from Anika, who's calling from Acton, Massachusetts. Hi, Anika.
Hi. My question about this is that I'm also a classic piano player. I've been playing for 7 years, and I'm a huge fan of jazz and blues. I've just started to play jazz, and I'm finding it very discouraging because I'm so stuck into classical piano. I'm wondering, when I heard that you played so easily in jazz when you got into high school, how did you do that?
How did he make the transition?
Yes.
Anika, can I just ask, just for my curiosity, how old are you?
12.
You're 12, and you've been playing for 7 years.
Yeah.
So give her some help there, Dave.
Well, thanks for calling, Anika. You know, when I was about your age, you know, I was playing, Beethoven, Mozart, you know, that kind of thing. And I've always liked to make up stuff at the piano, just sit down and touch the keys and not even worry about if the sounds are right or not, you know, almost abstractly, just colors as though you were painting. Or, you know, doing some kind of architecture stuff. But getting back to the classical stuff, you know, I used to sit down and I'd get bored with what I was doing, so I'd make up something and, you know, it's kind of syrupy and, you know, with a kind of feeling to it. My mother would say, "Hey, what was that you were doing?" And I said, "Oh, it's just a new piece of Chopin." You know, oh, it was very beautiful. And I used to get a kick out of, you know, fooling her or whatever. But the jazz thing, you know, it does take a lot of discipline, and you have to, you know, understand the chords. You have to get into the scales a little bit that are associated with the chords. But more importantly, you just kind of sit down and just feel wonderful about just playing notes and not worrying about whether they really fit or not.
Hmm. So it's a really a sort of a process of breaking out of the rigorous discipline of classical music?
Well, there's a whole other discipline to jazz, and believe me, it's daunting. You know, one reason why I, you know, got into blues, I would say, is that, you know, for me, you know, blues is so accessible. On surface, you know, it seems very simple. You know, just, you know, a blues scale or whatever, and you play and you have your chords or whatever, and it's kind of simple in one respect, but in another respect, you know, all the subtleties and the intricacies are there, and that takes years to really develop. But the thing about blues is that you can really express your emotions, and the audience can feel that. Everybody has those emotions, and, you know, with blues, there's a certain kind of direct, you know, contact with that. Not that jazz doesn't express that either, but there's something, you know, where people kind of respond, you know, when you're playing certain blues licks.
Anika, thanks for the call. Really appreciate it. 1-800-423-8255. Ray is calling from Hanover, New Hampshire. Hi, Ray.
Hi.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks for taking the call.
Glad you called. What's up?
It's so wonderful to hear Dave's music. Dave, thank you for your contribution to the culture of the blues. It just brings back such wonderful memories of the 60s for me. And to answer your question about do I think the blues will ever disappear, heck no. It's so visceral and it's so essential to our emotions. I mean, jazz is wonderful, but it's so intellectual, cerebral, if you will. But the blues, that's the visceral part, the emotional piece of us that I think we all need. What I guess I could comment on is that I think the venue for what we had in the 60s is no longer there. I remember the Pioneer Club. I remember the After Hours places, the Jazz Workshop, Estelle's, even Slade's, and some other places whose names I've forgotten.
Louis Lounge, the Big M.
Right, the Big M, all of those. And what I saw as a person then was, you know, we went from place to place to hear wonderful music, whatever that music was. And the blues was definitely a big piece of that. But people went to share their emotions, their love of music, their camaraderie. there was such a diversity. It was a healthy time, I think, for people to share all this kind of love. Yeah. Now, there are not those opportunities. I see a lot of the concerts as so scripted. Everything is really by the book, contractual.
Well, Ray, you raise a couple of issues that I want to get into with David, and thanks so much for the call. I mean, Dave, Ray's talking about fewer venues. I mean, there's sort of two things that seem top of my list about the sort of tenuousness of the blues, and that is a lot of these old guys are disappearing. They're not with us anymore.
That's true. Yeah.
You know? So what does that mean? How are the blues changing? How have you seen them change in the 50 years or so that you've been playing them?
Well, not quite 50.
No, sorry, David. I didn't mean to age you there. I apologize.
In any event, no, it's true. I mean, there's Skip James, Son House, Fred McDowell, all those guys certainly are not around. Although, you know, Robert Jr. Lockwood, who's in his early 90s, Pine Top Perkins, who's in his early 90s, they're still around. And then the generation after them, you know, James Cotton, with whom I've worked for, you know, years from time to time, he's still out there playing. I mean, Buddy Guy, of course, is out there.
Mm-hmm.
But there seems to be, you know, the old school kind of what people might say old school type of blues, and there's that going on. But it seems like that over the years, it's become, the sound itself has become more generic. You know, a little bit more homogenized. You know, you don't have the great personalities that you had in years past, particularly coming out of the 60s. Or, you know, the guys who are around from that period, the originators, they're either not around, or people like, well, for instance, Otis Rush had a stroke, unfortunately, almost a couple of years ago, and so he's not playing anymore.
But when you say it's more homogenized, what do you mean? That it's more formulaic, or
more formulaic? Yeah. I think that in part of it is due to the record companies, you know, having a certain sound that they think is commercial and that is going to sell blues records. Although blues is really as a genre, is way, way down, more than it ever used to be. I mean, it's below jazz, it's below, and you know, classical, I think, as far as selling, you know, CDs is concerned. And there are fewer and fewer venues to play.
Let's try to get at least another call in and make sure we leave time for David to play at least one more number. Don is calling from Nashville. Hi, Don.
Hello.
Thanks for the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a picker here in Nashville. I'm 65 years old. I first became aware of Freddie King back in about 1960, and I was wondering if you could elaborate a little more on your knowledge of him. And I know he was a fingerstyle picker, and if possible, maybe I'd like to hear one of your renditions of a piece of his music.
Well, you know, Freddie...
This is Freddie King we're talking about.
Yeah, Freddie King.
Who you toured with for many years.
Well, yeah, I was with him for a couple of years, and at that time, there were videos that were shot of these concerts, and you know, as a matter of fact, you can still get them. And you see me with my, you know, mutton chops and beads and whatever. You know, I mean, at that time, Freddie was, you know, trying to straddle the whole thing with the influence of soul music and people like Sly and the Family Stone, and getting a little bit of that into his, you know, some of this funkiness, and still keeping the blues. And, you know, I love playing with Freddie. It was a wonderful experience. And, you know, I moved on after that with Bonnie Raitt and many other people, James Cotton, of course. But a funny story with Freddie is that, you know, we were playing in Montreux, and this is on video, Montreux,
at the Jazz Festival.
The Jazz Festival.
Right.
And Freddie did this tune, "Have You Ever Loved a Woman?" And it's just, you know, really, it was so heart-wrenching, and sometimes a tear would come to my eye when I was playing that with him, just because, you know, the emotion was so intense. And so, you know, he used to turn to me at somewhere in the song and say, "Okay, Maxwell," and, you know, it was time for me to take a solo. But, you know, being so full of enthusiasm and stuff, I decided to stretch my one chorus into two. But the video, you see him, you know, with his guitar, picking it up, ready to come right into that top of the chorus with, you know, his solo. And I continue playing, and it looks like, you know, he makes this grimace, and it looks like someone just, you know, kicked him in the stomach or something.
Because you weren't relinquishing the piano. You weren't giving him back his the spotlight.
Right. And then that's great. There's some other videos, you know, in Sweden and Europe and the studio in Dallas or whatever, where I keep to my one chorus. But Freddie was terrific.
Were you on any of his studio sessions with him or recordings?
Well, what happened was that, you know, he started recording for Leon Russell's label. And so Leon got the to play the piano stuff at that time.
Okay.
So I'm on live in Ann Arbor, I think.
Don, thanks for the call.
All right. Thank you.
I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point. Just a quick follow-up about that Freddie King story. If you transgressed in that way, would you hear about it later? Would you be on the bus and he'd have to come over and say, boy?
Well, you know.
How would that work out?
Yeah, well, no, listen, you know, he was pretty cool with that. I mean, Freddie, you know, at times, you know, he liked to, we had this kind of love-hate thing going on. You know, there was a lot of partying going on and, you know,
I'm sure.
And so, you know, sometimes I got out of hand, or he thought I got out of hand and would, you know, slap me with a fine. No, I was the only white guy in the band, you know, and, you know, this was, you know, a sort of thing where, not that I'm saying that it's, you know, a kind of, but I was so different and kind of vulnerable than the rest of the cats,
yeah.
You know, and,
right.
And he really respected my talent a lot.
Right.
And, you know, I, you know, kept with them, and you know it was.
It's a great anecdote, a great story. David, let's. Can you do another tune for us?
Yeah, I want to.
Which I think is probably going to take us close to the end. So.
All right. Well, this is a tune that I enjoy playing called "After Hours." It's another classic. Avery Parrish did it with the Erskine Hawkins Orchestra in the late '40s. Here we go. Thank you.
That's blues pianist great David Maxwell playing live for us here in the studio. David is a Grammy Award winner and a WC Handy Award winner. His latest CD is called Max Attack, available from 95 North Records. You can continue the conversation, download the On Point podcast, and subscribe to our daily newsletter at our website, onpointradio.org. Our senior producer is Joe O'Connor. I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.